Hello and welcome back to Couch Surfing with Koi, the traveling podcast where the guests are whoever lets me sleep on their couch. And in today's episode, I'm in Brighton in the United Kingdom again with the hilarious and incredibly talented Tommy Innit. Tommy blew up on the internet about 5 years ago when he was just a teenager for playing Minecraft on the Dream SMP, and he kind of became known as the annoying kid of the internet. Now he's 20 years old, and I forced myself into his home to talk to him about growing up on the internet, his recent transition into stand-up comedy, dating stories, getting over the fear of being seen, as well as a bunch of other stuff that you will listen to very soon, as soon as I stop talking. So I'm going to stop talking now and let you listen to the episode. Thanks so much for watching, and thank you so much, Tom, for being on the episode. I think you're going to enjoy it a lot. I love you so much. Thanks for being here.
Mate, in my house.
And thanks for being in your house.
Thanks for having me.
This is a great couch. Really sinks you in.
And it's the nicest sofa in the world.
It's the best one I've been on so far.
And you just sit on it. You do the little, I get home, I come in and I do the,
yeah.
It's that noise every day. It's just pure elation.
Yeah.
That's why I need a dog, because then the dog could run up. And we have the exact same sofa at home in Nottingham, and Betty or Walter would always run up and sit here, and it's just the best.
You've been changing up a lot of your stuff recently, I've noticed.
Yeah. How so?
I mean, like, for one, posting a YouTube video in 3x4.
Oh, that was awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was just because I was like, well, this is a personable video, so I'll crop it in a bit.
Yeah.
But no one expects a 3x4 thumbnail. That's when I showed them.
That's where they get you. Yeah. Your YouTube's changed.
Thanks,
video,
man.
Which was very good.
Oh,
well, I didn't
mate,
say anything
you.
Good about it, and you said thank you immediately.
Wow.
I was getting the compliment.
I just knew where I was going.
Yeah, it was a great video.
It's changed.
It has.
I knew it.
Yeah. you cracked the code. You figured it out, dude. Well, it's a weird phase that it's at right now. And by weird, I mean terrible.
Yeah.
Just
awesome.
Just awful.
Yeah.
What are you watching on YouTube right now?
Mate, do you know what? I spent like 2022 and 2023, I watched so much YouTube. I would sit here and on this TV, like scroll. Like I get in and I just put on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the beginning of this year, I was like, oh my God, I spend 2 hours an evening minimum watching shit YouTube videos. This is really bad.
Mm.
And so ever since then, I've just watched films and good TV shows.
You don't watch any YouTube?
No.
When I'm in the office,
oh, shit.
Yeah, we got
I think
him.
It should have been called Tommy and it's changed.
Yeah. You're projected on YouTube.
Yeah, you've changed. I'm the same.
I'm the same.
No, I think I watch a bit when I'm like at the office and zone out. When it's like hits 4 o'clock and I'm like, oh, and then I start watching a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But if I see anything now, it's usually like video essays.
Yeah.
Long video essays about Matt Rife I've watched.
Oh.
I watched one that's 40 minutes long about him. I watched, there's this channel called Comedy Without Errors that just, I basically just watch niche things I'm into now. But I feel like that's what everyone does when you turn 20.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about finding yourself and watching Matt Rife video essays.
It's something like how the system failed Matt Rife.
Yeah,
like, or like, he's not sexist, society is.
Or like the 10 things you didn't know about toilets. And it's an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, I fell down a Matt Rife rabbit hole, man.
Really?
Yeah, because the person who mentors me, Daniel Sloss, was like, yeah, I'm mates with this guy, Matt Rife. You should check him out. He's like good at TikTok. And I checked him out. And then about a week later, he like actually blew up.
Oh.
He had like, and then about two months later, the special came out and everyone was like, whoa, this guy's awful. That's an embarrassing DM of me. Like, hey, Matt, look to Dominic for some time. Before it all like... Before I realized.
Oh, you know, he's known for this trick where he can take off his belt with one hand, and he does it almost every single
show.
Who
your sources on
it.
That?
Yeah, yeah, that's what people are paying for, the
Jesus,
tickets.
Yeah.
But he's one of those comics that's like, hates the fact that he's hot, but he loves it so much.
The video essay was just clips of him being like, oh, I want a more male audience. Oh, why are so many hot girls watching me? Oh, it's like that. It's weird.
He has one of the hardest lives, arguably.
He does. Not even arguably, mate.
Well, it depends on how difficult you consider taking off a belt with one hand.
That's hard.
That is hard.
That's hard. Interacting, like flirting with a woman, that's hard.
Yeah.
He just makes it look easy.
He doesn't call them hecklers. He calls them Riz.
Riz. Riz. Crowd work. As
crowd work is crowd flirt.
Yeah, flirt.
Flirt.
Well, he's not here.
Imagine if he was, though.
That would be really good.
Matt Rife steps in. He looks at you and is like, oh, what's up with you, man?
You seem to really like this guy.
I feel... Well, no, I don't feel for him. Mm-hmm. But, man, was it like a car crash you can't look away from.
Did he ever respond to your DM?
No. No, I got in just too late.
I thought he wanted a male audience.
I know, and I was there.
Yeah.
To be fair, his crowd work is very good. It's just his material is... He just rushed it out so quick. And then... It was just a prick about it.
Once the stuff that you're making becomes a reaction to people's reaction to you,
yeah,
it gets really bad, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Once the stuff you're making
becomes a reaction to people's reaction to you, it gets really bad. Like once someone blows up and then they're at the height of their fame and then they take everything that everyone's saying about them and that becomes the thing that they're talking about. It's like, that's not what people are watching. They're not watching you because they want to see you mad at everyone thinking you're so hot. But, I mean, we're talking about him, so it's working.
Look.
He's got...
No, I'm saying.
Matt Rife's changed. YouTube's changed.
What has changed?
No, but your video about YouTube changing, I really liked it. I think it's a...
Oh, thanks, man.
I think, I mean, like, everyone's been talking about the Mr. Beastification of YouTube, and can we bleep that? Make sure to bleep that name. Thank you. No, but I've loved to see your change. I mean, you blew up at a very young age.
Yeah.
You're still very young. Do you still feel younger? Is it weird having, you know, the youngest version of yourself exist on the internet? You know what I'm saying? That's a very prominent...
Do I still feel young?
Era of yours. Yeah. Or do you feel like jaded by...
It's weird. This year's changed. It's weird this year, like, as a YouTuber, I feel old. Like, I feel like when I'm in that, I'm like, yeah, I'm one of the eldest. I'm one of the, you know, the tallest trees. But then in, like, comedy, I'm like a little sapling.
Mm.
So it's really weird, like, feeling very old and very young at the same time.
Yeah.
Do you feel young? You're 20.
I think yes. I think that 20 is the youngest I've ever felt because you're kind of like suddenly a baby again. Like you're suddenly like, I don't know how to do anything and I'm just messing up all over the place. I mean, like moving out and moving to North Carolina, everyone there is like, you know, actively dying. You can see it in their eyes.
Yeah.
And I mean, that'll make you feel young when people just, they look mad at you for being young.
Yeah.
You know?
It's funny because I didn't feel for like a while... I felt very old. When I was about 18, I felt... Because I moved out when I was 17 to here, which is a bit odd.
Mm-hmm.
And then 18, I was really like... I didn't really have quite the perspective that I wanted. So for a while, I was very much like, I was a 16-year-old, and everyone liked when I was a 16-year-old. Now I'm 18, and fuck, what should I do next? And like really stressed about that.
Yeah.
But now I'm 20, and I've read a lot more books, and I'm like, I'm very young.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, yeah, my stand-up might take me like 3 years, and that's... Great. I've lived a lot more life since. I think that's made me go, oh, fucking hell, yeah.
I think you're at a very interesting point of your life, which is being 20, but also of your career, where, like, you already have this platform, but you're changing, and therefore the platform, the content you're making is going to. And I've had a hard time.
And that took a while for those two to have a bridge between them. There was a good while, I could probably name it, where I was changing and the content I was making wasn't. And there was a point when I was like all of these emotions I'm feeling on camera, like pretend now this is not what I want to do.
You almost look back. I mean, I've had that where I look back at the stuff that I'm making and I'm like, I feel like a character of myself.
You don't even feel like,
Or
like, it's like you at a specific time. Like when I was 16, that was like 80, sometimes 90% me and 10% character.
Mm.
And then when I was 19, it was like 80% character, 20% me. It's scary to change.
Just in general. And then also when you're like financial security and your life has been built from the person that you were when you were, you know, 16.
It's funny because I was never
that changing is
bothered about money. I think I was much more bothered about people liking me and accepting me.
And it sometimes you have to set kind of like guidelines for yourself of like, I won't talk to this person unless they have this amount of followers or this amount of money. And so making decisions based off of, you know, money and followers is like,
where's that going? It's like, you said that so like, sometimes Americans do sarcasm where they don't even say it like with a tone.
I've noticed that
I'm like, oh mate, please just drop a / s at the end of that.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what? Are you, Yeah. Oh no. Okay. Oh, yeah. You're
doing it's so bad here because a lot of my humor is like that, and a lot of people just don't get that, and so I'll just like, I'll just silence an entire room, and then I'll just have to be like, by the way,
Americans, they do it a lot sharper than British people do. Our sarcasm's a lot more chubby. That doesn't matter. I know that made a lot of sense. But like, it's like, yeah, okay. Whereas America would be like, yes, okay.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, okay, you didn't sound like you were joking on the second time.
Yeah. I think for me, the less sarcastic something sounds, the better the sarcasm is. I love being on that line right between like...
You're very good at it.
Irony.
Yeah, it throws me. Yeah. But like, I've met so many Americans that do it, and I'm like, it always like snaps you back into reality.
Yeah.
Like, oh, shit.
Well, you went, you were on tour in America. I got to see it. It was awesome. Thanks, incredible. Man. What was traveling America like? I mean, you were there for how long?
2 months. Oh. It was fucking awesome, man.
Yeah?
It was so sick. It was like, whoa. It was full on. Just before the tour started, I had my testicle surgery.
Mm.
And then it all kicked off online with everything you know, I needn't say.
Right.
But with everyone. And that was just the worst time.
Yeah.
And then about a week, 2 weeks into the tour, it's like, oh, your parents are splitting up. So it was full on, man. It was fucking, I was like in the middle of America by myself with the only two comforters being Jack Manifold and Freddie.
Oh, yeah, that's...
I mean, Freddie's very good. If Jack Manifold... Jack was so bad at comforting me. I like, walked into his room with like tears at like, Jack, my parents are getting a divorce. And he was like, well, things could be worse. I was like...
He's like, there could be like... you know, three other things going on that are also terrible.
Yeah, it was like, at least you're not on fire. but it was so mad. It was, honestly, even with all that stuff going on, it wasn't even a bad trip. It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was like, man, I've got my next book coming out, Tommy's Guide to Survival. And then after that, I've got Tommy at the Survival Tour, which is going to be sick.
How's that book? Because you have, what was it, the Tommy at Quote? Yes. Tommy Knit says, what was
the
that?
Poorly aged Tommy Knit quote book. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so I was like,
how's
okay.
this different than the, I mean, well, like the, for, without the obvious, how's this different than the last book?
First of all, I didn't spend the most, I didn't really know what was going on or that I was writing a book. It was like, oh, cool, we're doing this. And then this book was like, oh, hang on, I've been writing comedy for a year or two now. And a year, like I want to actually really make it. So I would sit down and had a load of topics to survive from like Meet Yours to like depression and anxiety. And it was a comedy book, basically, I guess, taking the piss. And my whole fan base and me have all gotten a lot edgier in the past 2 years.
Mm.
Like, it's been amazing.
Yeah. I just saw a video you uploaded of the LD Shadow Lady offensive rap video.
Yeah.
It's very...
It's stupid. It's mad. I'm like, oh my God, 2020 me would be so proud of me now. Just but with my edgy as fuck.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's also like...
It's like all the other Dream S&P members were like, come here, guys. You're safe with me. And I was like...
who else are they protecting them from? You know,
you've got
to
really.
Give them an antagonist. Yeah. Well, it's cool to see, because, I mean, like, there is, you know, kind of an element of shock to see you do things like that and see that.
The book's a lot that change. Edgier.
Yeah.
And it's nice, but I think, because when I was 16, I thought edgy was just, like, doing things that I disagree with morally. And now it's like, oh, okay, cool. Edgy can actually be, like, you know, nuanced and funny and, like...
Yeah.
Truer to myself and my views. And I guess his book as well is, I get pretty vulnerable in it as well, talking about like, I guess anxiety and imposter syndrome and things I've never really tackled online. Yeah, the quote book was like, you just have like a page with a single phrase on it.
Right.
Like, this is a book.
Right.
This book's like actually 200 words of funniness.
Yeah, I also think that like edgy humor kind of dips more into like using humor to cope with things,
right?
You know, of like, even you see, like, I know you're really interested in SNL, like SNL Weekend Update, a lot of it is like,
really
they've been
edgy.
Doing really
it's
well.
It's getting so good.
It's getting so edgy, but it's still so funny and tasteful.
It's
like the moments where you're like, I shouldn't be laughing at this, but I am, feel so good because you're like, this thing that usually brings me so much, so much pain. And so like, you know, that's usually not a thing that I'm laughing at. It's so relieving to like break tension around something that usually causes you a lot of it.
He's Aaron. Hey, you Aaron. Know?
Hi, Aaron.
Yeah, I guess a lot of my comedy this year has been about that, because I guess a lot of the joke where my edginess has come from now is kind of that place of like.
Yeah. Well, you've been given a lot to cope with. You know? That's the best thing a comedian could ask for.
Yeah, right? Like, my parents got divorced. I was like, yes, I'm definitely going to make it now as a stand-up. It's like, yes!
Yeah,
it's been a lot on. Like, I had enough on before this year.
Yeah.
Of, like, what the hell is going on with this whole being people knowing me thing? So mm-hmm. it's been enough on.
Do you feel like you're getting a bit more adjusted to it? Like,
yeah, a lot more.
Yeah. I finally feel like I've settled out. I get to Greenville, North Carolina, and I'm processing the fact that I'm going to have to pay bills now for the first time. And I'm financially independent. I'm like 11 hours away from my family. I think I got like really thrown into the deep end really quickly. Yeah, and now I'm like, nothing is going to be Mr. Beastland again. Like, I think that Hollywood, it might be less jarring than like randomly in Greenville, North Carolina, all of these like guys that are... You know,
it's funny because I was chatting to my mum about this the other day after all the Logan Paul stuff. Mm. And like when I went on Impulsive, I remember that was my first taste of being just turned 17 and being like, you know, here's all, because I wasn't old enough yet to do anything crazy, but like, here's all these parties and clubbing and drugs and sex and all of this stuff. And I just remember getting like people spending lots of money on stuff. Mm. And I think that was a really important experience for me, because I remember getting home to my mum and being like, I don't want any of... Fuck off! Yeah. Like, that looked... You know, because I think it gets very romanticized and glorified online and, you know, especially online in recent years with all the sort of Andrew Tate stuff and, like, in movies.
Yeah.
You see and you're like, you lot look tired, man.
Yeah.
You lot need, like, a hug from your mum.
Yeah.
So it was quite nice seeing that early on and being like, you know, because I got invited out to North Carolina and to the fucking Dream Team house and to LA and just being like... That, mate, I'd rather be in shitty cold England with a load of people I love than fucking in a hot tub surrounded by cunts.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason I keep coming back here, and also, like, you know, the comfort of a good community around that's very like making stuff out of a place of just like enjoying
good people here,
making
good
stuff people. yeah
it's been nice having a much tighter...
Yeah.
I think after I got back from tour, I literally saw like six people for 4 months. Well, I know I did. I saw about six people for 4 months. So it was weird coming back out of my shell. It's been lovely.
What's this new tour like? Because I saw your first tour. It was like the story... It was like what, like...
Yeah,
it was framed as like how to become a millionaire, but it was kind of like the story
how to,
of...
How to be a billionaire. But really, it was like a story of my life video, but very, you know... And it was my first tour. I hadn't done lots of writing then, and I still loved it, and with the help of the people I worked on it with, it was just this massive, way bigger than it needed to be show.
Mm-hmm.
But this is me on a stage with a mic, so the opening is me doing stand-up. I think about 30, 40 minutes of stand-up, which I've never done to my audience before, which will
you
be
have
really...
You have 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Wow.
I will.
Okay.
By April. Yeah. Right now, I've got about 20.
That's impressive, though. That's hard. I mean, 5 minutes is hard to get.
Yeah, well, I've been doing 2 gigs a week, roughly. One gig a week since January of 5 minutes. So I've put my fucking back into it. And then the next hour of it is me with a special guest and an interview between the two. Well, them interviewing me with questions I've pre-wrote for them. And you can imagine the sort of things I'm going to...
Yeah.
But it's a lot more in the room and interacting with the audience. And
Fun.
This is my first ever promo I'm doing for the hour.
Wow. That's exciting.
Thank you.
Wow. Tommy Innit's changed.
No. YouTube changed. Tommy Innit based.
Are you... Okay, I have to know. Are you going as... Is this a Tommy Innit branded?
This term? Is Tommy Innit, but I think the next... If I do another book, or it will be Tom Simon soon.
Yeah.
Tommy Innit's on his way out.
I could feel this. Yeah. Tommy Innit's on his way out.
Yeah. I mean, I'll never change the Tommy Innit channel, and I'll always do YouTube, but like, Tom Simon's is... I'd like to be that.
I just killed the Piso for channel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's it
now? That one's gone. It's this. It's couch surfing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that one's this. And then the Koi channel, that one was just like vlogs and just whatever I want to do. I mean, Koi killed Piso a lot sooner than I could have ever expected. Yeah. You know, the Gen Z TikTok.
Oh, powerful. I that inspired a bit I do in my new stand-up.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
I haven't seen yet. Like, yes. Boom, boom, boom.
Really?
It's pretty, yeah.
I need to see it. Okay. That one was... Like 6 months after I've already like released it, and someone comes into my chat and they're like, they showed that video in my class. I had to put my head down. I was like, what world are we showing this?
Oh my
God. And then I find the link. It was in a Wall Street Journal video. The Wall Street Journal used the video of me pretending to be like insufferable Gen Z.
That's awesome. It's a very good depiction of like Gen Z. Because like, I was up at the Edinburgh Fringe not long ago, and like the difference between Gen Z humor and millennial humor is mad. Mm-hmm. Like, it is really good Gen Z humor. Like, it like perfectly described. Like, the whole thing is we like everything we do is like shrouded in an array of irony that like other people just don't get.
Yeah.
Well, it was this video. This woman was like, and this is what Gen Z are into. And it was like one pole crashing sound, 100 pole crashing sound, 1 million billion pole crashing. That was just like greasing. Like, this is so stupid. But yeah. Like, they just don't get it.
Well, I think the thing with Gen Z is like we're the first generation to one be funny and two and two have kind of grow up with everything in front of us, and so it created this very like meta nihilistic like you show us everything we're gonna take it and it all you know, it's the everything everywhere all at once, the like everything meaning nothing. It's like our humor meaning nothing. Is what, it makes sense because we were given everything to work with.
Look at that.
Yeah,
it's funny because like I think because we had everything and it's. There's a great Chris Rock quote talking about why comedians a lot of them are depressed. And it's like ignorance is bliss. If you can spend all your time thinking about everything, you're going to be depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And our generation has spent all the time thinking about everything because we have the internet and being pushed in our face. You know, for us, comedy is a lot sillier. Mm-hmm. It's funny because the people who that parallel a lot is 60s and 70s, especially early 70s comedians. Oh. So like Steve Martin, because that was so silly because it had just been the Vietnam War and like the most fucking miserable time in America.
Yeah.
And they go straight, like, he comes along, like, everyone's in this fucking gritty political humor. He's like, oh, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, this is sick. And so when I'm doing my stand up now, there's this woman in Brighton who's 80 who does stand up called Shah.
Wow.
She's an amazing 80 year old woman. And she's a person who I've connected with. I text her like loads because stand up's such an old man's game now because it's all basically for the past few years old white guys being like, let me make fun of trans people.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just like, I think it's painted such a bad picture of it.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, oh yeah, no, this is like the best thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, watched
all myself.
I watched one of your gigs and it was like, I mean, like as a Gen Z person in the audience, it was a very like breath of fresh air because the guy, I think maybe even before you, someone was doing, I mean, everything was very like typical stand up. And also it's very interesting to me to watch British humor and because there's not an ounce of like irony or sarcasm in it. It's very just like, these are the things I hate. Do you hate them too? Yeah. Laugh now. But it was really, I think the act before you was doing something about all of the generations. And it was like, millennials be like this and Gen Z be like this. And like, it was really interesting to see his perspective. He was an older man. It was interesting to see his perspective of all of the like generations and stuff. And then right after that, I think is when you went on and it was just such a breath of fresh air for like, meta and irony. And like, you just don't know where the act is going. And that like that suspense and that like breaking the format, you know, the like unexpectedness of that. It's so good.
Thank you.
And it's very inspiring because I want to get into stand up.
Thanks, man. It's just there's just such a magic to it. And I felt like with my earlier videos it was a magic when I was in the Dream SMP and that of just excitement and just anticipation and just this I can't even describe it.
Yeah,
I really
you're creating
can't.
A feeling, but,
Yeah, and I really felt that before, and then for years I was, like, trying to get back to it, and I just couldn't really find it. And then this has been like, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, it's here. This is it. I found it.
Uh-huh.
Through little inklings at a time, through doing a live show and doing that, and now I'm, like, just this thing of, I could talk about why I love stand-up for hours, but being in the room with all these people.
Yeah.
And all of, it's like a fragment of the joy you get from the internet is, like, quadrupled in a fucking room full of these people laughing at the same thing. And you know, it's why I'm trying not to compare this show to my previous one, because my previous one was like a narrative thing, but this is like, mate, every 20 seconds you're gonna be properly laughing surrounded by, and it's just, there are some nights at the stand-up gigs I've been to where there's just a magic in the room, like an actual, and you can sense it, you can feel it, where every act just kills it after another, and they're all different and spectacular in their own way. There was one where I was on the billing and I was in the second act and the first act was just incredible. Then I went on the second act, I was like, second, it was gone. There was not that energy in the room. But I think on the night you saw, that was a night I had a really good set, and the room was great, and had some younger people, and I'm just like, this is like my magic trick. I can show you it. This is, I love this.
And it's different every time.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, I did a lot of live performance. I mean, it's all I knew before the internet.
Yeah.
Really? I did.
That shocks me.
Really?
No, that was my British sarcasm.
Oh.
It's obviously.
Sorry, I don't get much of that.
Voice changed.
I heard the tone change, but I thought it just was you being genuine.
It wasn't my best delivery. I can't, even I can admit that.
No, it's okay. I did improv in high school for 4 years. Now you can do it.
Shocker.
Yeah. Okay. That was good. Yeah. I did improv, and it was just like, I mean, we'd be in like a conference room that they would change into like, there wasn't even a stage. It would be like, and it would just be like people's parents and then people who maybe found out that there was improv at the school.
Yeah.
And like, it was just like the lamest thing ever, but like, it was so much fun because it was different every night.
Yeah.
The crowd was different every night. And you'd be like, oh.
And how many people were in this crowd?
Probably like 30.
Yeah, right.
40.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's just, it's tiny most of the time. And it's with other schools. You're competing against other schools. And so you're like,
I would love
it's
that.
It's so, it, get into improv. It is.
I did a class in Brighton, but I mean, I enjoyed it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Stand-up gives for me what I need.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a dangerous game to play. But, and also high schoolers
get, like,
doing
too
improv.
Much sex.
Yeah.
Because it's so good. Everyone just throws themselves in.
Yeah, well, high school improv is just like, the type of kids that were doing high school improv are the type of kids that you would expect.
They
to
needed
do
it.
Yeah.
They needed it more than the audience needed it.
Absolutely. You know? Well, it was for us. But, oh, the worst is when, like, you have everyone's parents in the audience, and then someone comes out and, like, does, like, and I'm Pepe the Frog.
Would people do that?
Oh, you get someone like from the other school, or
and
when someone
I'm Pepe the Frog,
and like all the audiences, all the
and
audience
I'm Jake
are, like,
Paul,
yeah, and all the parents are like, they don't get
I
it.
I have a pen. Yeah. I have an apple.
The feeling that I've gotten from live performance from an audience of 30 people, four of them are laughing at me. And
yeah,
it's, you know, my parents and my parents' friends.
Yeah.
I mean, that feeling is...
It's incredible.
10 times better than getting a million views on a video that I'm kind of...
You
know?
I mean, I had 650,000 people on a stream, and I was so much more nervous the other night to go in front of those 60 people in that room you
mm-hmm,
saw. Because
mm-hmm.
it's just... There's so much more riding on. You have a responsibility, and you have a, you know...
Yeah.
You're not in your comfort zone. And yet, when you go... It's like the... Oh, when you're on that stage, you're in that moment, and you have to. It's like things move at half speed for me. So like, you know that Quicksilver scene in X-Men.
Yeah.
So I'm looking everywhere, and I'm like, I said that punchline, that didn't get a joke there. Okay, that didn't get a laugh. Should have got that laugh. Why is he staring at me like that? She's talking on her phone. She needs to stop that.
Yeah.
Are all the things filming? That it's like everything at once. It's
everything
amazing.
That would be like an annoying Twitch chatter ends up becoming like an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just taking all the things I love of. Streaming, which was the hour I get to do and then end, and it's just made it like that, but even better.
Yeah,
I just love it so much.
Yeah, I need to get into it. I was. People are always telling me I need to do stand up. I'm one of those people that like when someone tells me to do something, I'm not doing it. You know, it's something that I'll get into. But I need everyone to stop telling me I'm so funny all the time.
Oh, I get it. I believe me.
And I get up there and I'm like, why are there only hot women at my shows? Like,
and you get one hand on the belly.
Take
and
it off. Take it. I'm pretty sure I've seen a clip of them like chanting, not to bring that up again, but it's so ridiculous.
Oh, man.
Do you, and we don't have to go into this if you don't want to, but did you spend any time in the like dating pool? Like, do you have like a worst date that like stands out to you? A date horror story?
Yeah. So I had one where I went on the date.
Mm-hmm.
And I arrived and she looked quite different. And we were meeting at a bar and I went, this is fine. So we have a chat and I've got quite a sore throat. And usually if a date's not going very well, I just talk and then leave. Because I can talk for a while. So we're sort of chatting and I'm like, ah, so what do you do? And she's like, I work at an old person's home. I'm like, so do you have to wipe their bums then? She's like, yeah, but I love it. And I'm like, okay. And so she didn't laugh. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I just keep sort of telling things and she keeps like not laughing. And I was like, oh, all right. And then she's like, by the way, my friends don't know who you are. And I'm like, oh, all right then. Well, and she's like, I don't really know, but they thought it'd be cool if I came on this date. And I was like, cool?
Yeah.
Cool? And then I couldn't keep talking and we just didn't click on it. I went through it. Because you know on your date you need to click with someone. So I bring up music, don't click. Bring up films, don't click. Bring up jobs, don't click. And I'm like, this is just miserable. Stop bringing up Minecraft, don't click.
You're not really into like watching old people's...
I was just like, I just thought I'd make a joke, and they were very serious about it. And so I just was like, oh, I've just got this mental text. I've got to get back. And then that was challenging.
Did you guys at least? She got a selfie before she left, right?
No.
I'm trying to think of the last date I went on, because I've been on a few dates in North Carolina, and you learn a lot.
Gay dates.
What was that? Gay dates? Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of them were gay. Most of the men. Yeah. I did meet one guy in North Carolina. He was gay, and then we went to his place. Because you can't really, like... There's not a bunch of places to just, like, go out, right?
Yeah.
I'm not joking about this. This sounds like a story I would make up. He wanted to turn on Andrew Tate. Gay man.
What?
On a date. Wants to turn on Andrew Tate. I was like, I need to pry. I need to figure out why he is the way that he is. He likes men because of how much he hates women.
Oh, what?
So far right, he went left.
Wow. At that point, it's a circle, isn't it? That's incredible.
Right? I remember being like, you don't, like, this is like first date, right? I'm like, you just don't like women. And he was like, well, yeah. And I was like, no, you, like, I was like, I like women more than I like men, and that's why I'm gay. The way that I love women is what makes me so gay. You don't even, I was like, this does not make sense. And the way, insane. And that is a very common type to exist in North Carolina.
Just repressed, very repressed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fuck. A lot of my dating experience is basically having to be like, within three messages, did you watch a Dream SMP?
Yeah.
Because the thing is...
That's how mine go to.
This is a great thing, but also really unfortunate. The only area that this is unfortunate is in dating life, is that all my audience is my age. That's great, because it means they all have the same humor as me, they're going through the same things as me, experience. When you're dating, it's like, oh, mate, did you watch a Dream SMP, or did you fucking, did you have a favorite character? So that was tough.
Yeah.
That was my biggest challenge on dating apps, was being like,
show me your tattoos. start there.
Do you have a quote?
Yeah.
Who am I without you, yourself?
Okay. Is that something your grandma used to say? Or... Well, it could be worse. You could be gay and dating.
No, it could, because I'm straight and in Brighton. It can't be worse than that.
Oh, that's like being gay in North Carolina.
Just if they had dyed hair, I was like, okay, pause.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
If you had dyed hair in 2020, then you loved me.
You loved... That checks out. Yeah, you ever see someone in the street and you're like, oh, they...
Oh, yeah, there's like a... There is a... If you told me to imagine my viewer... They have, it's dyed hair or a streak.
Okay.
That's cool. This is the general Tommy interview. Dyed hair, usually purple or pink or something.
Yeah.
Fucking baggy jeans.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have glasses. Basically, a girl or non-binary or something in that. Not a man, basically.
Yeah.
That's not very manly.
Yeah.
And that's enough for me to go. If you're that's it.
You should start getting up on the audience, or getting up on the stage and complaining and try to get more of a male audience.
I know. And this is the weird thing about my audience. When I whip off my belt, they complain.
What?
I'm like, we have this. Yeah, but if they have dyed hair.
There for?
If they have dyed hair, baggy jeans, and a feminine looking, I'm like, okay, yeah.
And how's their relationship with their parents?
Yeah. That's when I'm like, oh. And I love you guys, but fucking hell. Well, hang on. Oh my God.
What?
I only say I love you guys ironically, and I just said it like so unironic. I just went, and I love you guys, but, and I thought, hang on, no.
Whoa.
I knew that was my Gen Z to millennial moment just there. Wow. Where the irony stopped.
Whoa, that was scary.
That was...
I did feel something shift.
I know.
Yeah. We were talking about Dream SMP earlier. I'm always interested in what's going on the internet because I was always in like the Minecraft scene when I was a kid. So seeing what was happening to it in 2020 was very fascinating to me.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was really cool. I mean, it was something that like the internet just hadn't seen before. Full stop.
It was so good.
You know? And you get a lot of credit for your acting and your lore in it. That was a part that I was really envious of, I think, of you get to do Minecraft, which is the thing that I love, but also like theater, which was the thing that I loved as well.
It came about so like I didn't really. It's so funny, man, because I literally for the first few months of it was just I just got so wrapped up in the game. I was mm-hmm. just acting like that, mm-hmm. and it was. I remember there was a few times where we'd do a stream. I remember ending it being like when he betrayed us. I was like, "Eric is such a fucking prick," and then everyone was like, "Yeah, that was really great content." And yeah. I was like, "Oh, yeah, no, that was really great content."
This
yeah.
is the thing.
But I ended the stream was like. I was like, I'm removing error on Discord. He's a prick.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, sure, that was content.
Yeah.
So I literally was just being a 16-year-old wrapped up in the drama of it.
This was the thing that I was going to, I actually had written down to talk about. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I could see how, I mean, when you're acting
COVID as well, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Got nothing else going on.
I mean, like you spend so many hours in this game and it becomes your reality. And so when something happens in it, it's like when you have a dream about someone and then you wake up the next day and you're pissed at them. I remember when I was 16, I had to do a scene with my best friend where we got a divorce on stage. And that was the whole scene. And we'd come off the stage and we just couldn't talk to each other because we get so genuinely mad at each other. We've ended up falling out. Since then, I don't know if that's related to the divorce or.
That's funny.
But yeah, I think like the like emotional and.
This is gonna sound insane. I actually think the divorce arc with Tubbo made us a bit less close because it would be like every time we're on stream together, we're like bitting against each other instead of like together.
Yeah,
and it was just like annoying.
Wow, do you think that's still
no? But I did have a chat with him. I was like, I think we should like stop doing this now because mm-hmm. like I miss when we were like on the same side.
Yeah.
I was like, Toby, what am I without you? And he went, yourself? I went, that's sick, Toby. Oh my God.
So dramatic. It's so that's why it's hard for me to see people's content that are just like they're doing just like insane shit, treating each other just insane, and then being like, well, that's just like the bit or the thing we do. Yeah. I have trouble separating myself from the things that I'm making. Emotionally, like even when I am being very like, this obviously isn't me. This is obviously a bit where, you know, I just get emotionally lost in it.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. Yeah. And I would with the Dream SMP. I guess that's kind of the only time for me where I would get, or maybe something like stand up, like where if someone's heckling you, obviously it's personal.
That's a bit more real than air it.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. I do. I feel that though.
Yeah. Interesting. So what do you want the next year or two?
You know, I'd like if my YouTube lived in the shadow of my comedy, I guess.
Mm.
I'd like that. I really feel like this is, I just love it.
Mm.
But like, properly do. And I've loved things for like a few weeks or even a month, but I've been doing this for 10 months now. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm serious about this. It's like a relationship, you know? It's like when you enter that, like, the honeymoon phase is over. It's like, no, there have been nights where this is, like, this is awful.
Yeah.
There have been miserable nights of my stand-up where I had, like, 3 gigs in a row that all bombed. Mm. Or just didn't go how I wanted. And I was just like, this is fucking horrendous.
But also, no one's talking about those gigs anymore.
Those stay behind you. But they stay with me, you know? And it's nice it's been such a private... Everything on the internet is so online. I've had this whole... I don't want to say life, but sort of life that literally has just happened with me. Because mm-hmm. with the stand-up, it's you by yourself on the road, you by yourself on the train, you by yourself. And it's just been lovely to live these sort of two lives at once of one being a YouTuber and, you know, like I'm sat arguing with Logan Paul in the day and then at night I'm like the shit, a superhero.
And he lives two lives too. He's like arguing and then he has a child to take care of. Yeah.
But like, you know, and then I'm just like in a crummy little basement, like feeling terribly anxious because I'm about to go on stage. And I just... I love that. And yeah. I, whatever it be in comedy, whether it be writing comedy or writing on a show or being on a show or doing my own stand-up, I don't care. Whatever that is, I want to do, because I'm so lucky that I never meant to be funny. Like,
yeah.
I did my Skyblock videos. For a long time, I just did whatever made me popular, and I did my Skyblock videos, people liked those, and I accidentally was a bit funny in them. Then I went on SNP Earth, and I sort of fell into being the funny little one.
Yeah.
And then I did the Dream SNP, and that was when I really came out of my shell and was like, okay, cool, people like when I'm loud and funny.
Mm-hmm.
I could, and because that started so small, I didn't really have to... There wasn't really a point where I had to be like, oh my God, this is the massive... Like, I'm being really loud and myself to all these people, because it started with this tiny little server that I did. I literally didn't give a shit about. It was like this stupid server at the end of a stream with these people I didn't know, that all I knew about them is that the fans were a bit mental.
Yeah.
And it was this weird culture, and I liked Jay Schlatt, and he thought it was stupid, so I thought it was stupid.
Yeah.
So I joined that and just took the piss. And I basically just, the entire server took the piss, until suddenly it was like, whoa, wow, I'm myself. And like, and then I'd started doing the mod videos, and then they were funny.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really giving you my whole history right now.
No, I'm enjoying it. But I'm
like,
listening.
Well, thank you. And then that was like, oh, I'm clickbaiting. Me being funny is mm-hmm. getting more views.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then somewhere along the lines, I was like, hang on, I actually think I like being funny, because people like it and I really like it.
Yeah.
At some point you go, oh, I think that might be the thing I like.
Uh-huh.
And then I think it was when I spent like 2022 being like, I'm going to get loads of views because I love getting views. And then I did, and I was like, I'm not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, what if I'm funny? And then I've been funny. I was like, oh, I think that was the thing I liked all along, actually.
Because mm-hmm.
even when you retrace to my first videos, when I had like 1,000 subs, I was just making me and Freddie laugh, really.
Yeah.
Or making myself laugh. And now I'm like, oh, yeah, I think that's why I actually liked all along.
Yeah.
And so it's nice, you know, very... So I guess that's what's next for me in terms of the big picture. But
you're
going to
be funny?
I'd like to be. But I'd like if you need it. I'd like if that was like my job.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
currently YouTube is, because I'll never not post on YouTube, mm-hmm. and I'll always like go and do a little fucking. I really like how it is now, where it's sort of like how it was in school, where I go, oh shit, I should do a YouTube video.
Yeah.
And then I do one, and I post it, it's nice. And I think I'll always do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I work much better when it's my second priority and it stews in the background, and then at the end of the week I'm like, ah,
yeah,
rather than when I had like my whole week to think about YouTube, I just went a bit mental.
Well, now that the thing that you actually enjoy doing is bleeding into the format, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure of just like,
and I love YouTube, I just don't love it. I don't love spending a whole week on it. I love it,
yeah,
when it stews in the back of my head, and then I have an idea and I make it. And then, like, that whole YouTube change video literally was just, I had a really good chat, and then I came home and a script fell out of me. Originally, it was going to be a Reddit post, and mm-hmm. then the script fell out of me, and I was like, oh, no, there's something more to this.
That's happened to me with, I made a video about VidCon, and it was just going to be a little vlog, and then as I was around there, I was like, I've always been interested in VidCon since I was a kid, and then suddenly I had a, you know, 6-page script in front of me in a 30-minute video.
It just, you just like take one little step to making the thing better, what you think would be better, and then you've taken so many steps, and you look behind you and you're like, fucking hell, I'm high up.
Well, one last thing for you. I ask everyone a question of advice from my own life. My big one that I'm struggling with right now is, you know, I went to Beastland and I saw all of the eyes there, and I'm trying to get comfortable again with just like being seen, you know. And I, as someone who like toured, and now you're going and trying all of these things in person, and you're, you know, balancing with YouTube back and forth. How have you kind of grasped the concept and been able to process that? Because it's a hard thing to process, you know.
Tell us a bit more about what you, what is it that like, you.
I guess just like
struggling with.
I have the things that I want to make, and I want them to be successful, but I find myself in this like pattern of like every time that this like success starts to creep up, there's just this like fear and insecurity of the thing that I want to make, you know, once I get the thing that I want, I'm like, well, that's not what I wanted to want. That's not what I wanted. You know, I wanted this thing to be successful so I could keep doing it.
Yeah.
But I didn't necessarily want all of this, you know, the success and the pressure that comes with it. So how do you not let that?
Well, I'd say a few things. I'd say always, no matter what, life goes first before art or before career or anything. And it's so easy to forget that. But like, I used to say even when I was 16, I was like always happy before success, like 100%, because whatever you make, that bleeds into that. You just can't lie. Mm-hmm. And people can say, it's like, you know, our dogs can sense fear. People can just smell when you're not loving it.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. That's the most important thing. Like always be happy first and make sure that you're living life and enjoying it and are here, you know, first.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the next thing that you don't like having eyes on you, or that there's the pressure, or the...
I don't think it's that. It's just like I think losing, it's easy to lose sight up there or to yeah. like once you I like okay, so something specific that happened is like I posted my rating places with zero reviews video, and I was getting
not quite 100... YouTube change, but
right.
Sorry, probably that's been the running joke for this.
I was getting like, you know, it'd be a really good thing if I could get 100K of video, you know, yeah. and suddenly this video it's at like 5 million views or something now.
Yeah.
And every single comment, oh, this is the best video that's ever been made. Oh, like nothing on YouTube is ever going to top this, or like this needs to be added to the Hall of Fame, you know, hate comments like that.
Yeah.
But like things that like I took that and I really genuinely had to take like this like time away from it for so yeah, long.
It's a lot.
7 months, because I was like, what do you mean I peaked? Like, what do you mean I did? Like, once I start doing the thing that I really enjoy and something that's good and you put it out there, have it, you know, there's this, especially with YouTube, there's this like comparison culture that it's easy to like fall into, of like comparing yourself to your past self constantly and constantly being better and better and better. And I've kind of grasped it's that a bit.
Like really struggled with. Yeah.
Yeah. But, maybe it comes down to like imposter syndrome as well. Yeah, I mean, it's a number of things, but like when you get that success, like, do you find yourself like putting blinders on and like having to ignore it completely to like move forward, or like what's your
I find for me, when I get overwhelmed, I cling to the ground a lot more, and I spend more time with my friends and more time with my family, and a bit more, it isn't a time for processing,
right?
And, like, I've really spent a lot of this year sat by myself listening to music being like, whoa, and being very loser. Comfortable in that. But, like, when you need that support, I've had a very uninteresting 15 years and a very intense 6 years. Well, 5 years. I'm trying to think, because there's a lot of different things I want to say, but I'll talk about all of them.
Okay, so, okay.
imposter syndrome is shit.
Yeah.
But it reminds you that you're a human and everyone faces it. And you've just got to take a lot of solace in that everyone absolutely faces it. I guess the thing I like to remind myself is everyone, people's thoughts and what people think changes in a fraction of a second.
Mm.
And whilst it is impactful and you have impact on people's lives, like people doing stuff is the most important thing. So for me, I always, when I'm a bit overwhelmed, try and keep my head down and keep going and, you know, doing stuff, because it's easy to get lost in, oh my God, all these people think this. And then 3 seconds later, no one's thinking about that again. And they won't do, because the internet has a 3 second attention span.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
Like, and that's cool, but like, it's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, like, not to bring it back to him, but all roads lead to Matt Rife. I mean, it was the thing that I was saying of like reacting to the reaction that you get, you know, of it is like a 3 second attention span. That's a good point of like, if you don't give it attention, it will just kind of like move on, you know? I think that the probably grounding yourself in the community that you have around here is really good for like, keeping forward. I mean, like,
I'd say something my mum said is, you know, because I've spent the past few years having a lot of life and career strife and living by myself in a city. My mum says this thing to me, which was something like, you know, he's 34 now. When he was 20, Bo Burnham was a YouTuber. He was literally, he was a YouTuber. He was the first person to go viral.
Yeah.
Now, there's Mr. Beast and Bo Burnham, two opposite ends of the spectrum. Now, Mr. Beast is a lot more relevant. He's on Twitter every day. You're always hearing about him. You're talking about him. And then there's Bo Burnham, who's fucking, you know, incredible. He did Inside. He did his own film. But, like, I haven't heard from him in years. Why not?
But I...
Now, both of them, before they're both in these crazy, huge statuses, were two YouTubers. with the same amount of subs as me and you.
Yeah.
Who do you want to be? Do you want to be Mr. Beast or Bo Burnham? And I think I know your answer. So you just, I take a lot of solace in thinking like, what, how did he get there? Because he was in the exact spot I was in. Because he's got he's a person I want to be like. And a lot of that comes to honing your craft and working on that and thinking about it as an actual, like going to the gym, and it's a grind. You have to do it every day and you have to get better at making videos. And not every video is going to be perfect, but if you don't do it and get it, like stripping away that pressure, like I don't check anything online now because it's just, you know, too overwhelming and everyone says really intense things really quickly and then a day later they're not thinking about them anymore.
Yeah.
But also I think what's really important is understanding, and this is something I've thought about lots over the past few months, the relationship you have with your audience and what you mean to them and who they are and what their stories are and what your story is. And, you know, because you're a traveling companion to them over many years and, you know, these people have been by your side through your high points and your low points, and showing them, really, I think it's about showing them the same things they've showed you. And for my audience, it's been loyalty and respect and trust and kindness and love. And I want to show that as much back to them as I can while still remembering that I've got my own life, you know? And there's moments where it's like, oh my God, my audience feels like it's going to be, like I've had at points where there was, you know, 20 million people watching everything I've done.
Yeah.
And I've had other points where it was a few thousand. And I have people from when I had 10 viewers that still watch me now and are still mods in my chat. And I have people that have just discovered me today. And people that, you know, are going to move on and find a new YouTuber that's perfect for them and they could be into, or get back into me or stop watching me. And it's just about like treating them with the same thing they treat you. I think a lot about that. And I suppose, I guess gratitude is a really big part of it, and reminding yourself frequently, this shouldn't be happening. Statistically, this is incredible.
I'm always thinking that.
You know, a lot of people are like, oh man, I want to get 1 million subs. Oh man, I need to get 10 million subs. Oh man. Like, no, you're a YouTuber. That's the reward.
Yeah.
You've got it already.
Yeah.
You are a YouTuber.
Yeah.
You don't need any more than that.
Wow, that's good.
And I think about that a lot. And then I also think at the same time as gratitude, just making sure that you show yourself self-respect and self, you know. I think I really struggle with people would tell me like, mate, people say to me, you know, and this is quite heavy, I'm just going to warn, but like, mate, I was about to kill myself and then you went live and then I didn't. And that made me go, well, why don't I just stream every single day, every single, because like, what, I don't want anyone to,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I remember saying that to my mum and being like, "That I'm really free, like I need to stream."
Yeah.
She's like, you know, that's really great that you helped, but maybe another thing could have helped, or maybe a million different things got them to that point. Like,
yeah,
don't stress, you know, about that. Yeah, making sure throughout all of that you, you know, are grateful, but also treat yourself with that respect. Because it's, you know, I've had years where I've not thought about that. You know, I remember when I first moved here, I was sitting there stressing out, ringing my dad, being like, "Dad, I'm not making enough TikToks. I just found out you need to make." And I was like, "It's like that's not what."
Yeah,
and remembering as well, the reason people connect with you, because that video you made, you had no intention of that getting 5 million views.
Mm-mm.
And the reason people connect with you is because you mean it, and because you're honest, and because you're kind, and because you're funny, and because... And
you can keep going.
But I can, though, right? And it's like clinging to those things that are the root of why people watch you. And that's where everyone goes wrong, is because they focus on, you know, we're in a very... consumer-led world now, and society, and they focus on the product and not the process.
It takes all of those things away, that vulnerability.
And you need to focus on the process, and people are afraid to take a baby step when nothing might happen at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go, well, this is... I can take a step and nothing can come from this, and that's fine, because it's getting me towards the right thing.
I like the... I always think about the metaphor of... climbing the mountain and just staring at the peak the entire time instead of staring at the path on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you're not going to get to the peak of the mountain if you're staring at it the whole time.
And also you won't realize how far you've come if you're halfway up a fucking mountain.
Right. Like, you're just going to realize how far away you are. Yeah.
When you do get to that peak, it's a pipe dream. It's always it's cold up there.
Right.
You know, it's like a mountaintop.
Absolutely. And not many people are up
and you
there.
You can't breathe very well and it's miserable. Like, and I've had my points where I've gone, God, I want to be there. Mm-hmm. And then you've got there and you've gone, this isn't...
Well, and if if you're
remotely what I signed up for.
If you're not focused on what's around you, you lose all that's around you by the time you get up there.
Yeah.
And then you see people that...
And it's just a balance. I remember when I hit 10 million subscribers and being like, oh my God, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. Then looking around, seeing all of my mates with girlfriends and out getting laid and having fun and trying drugs and like finally experiencing life.
Mm-hmm.
I was sat indoors for the past 4 months like, oh my God, what the... Like, I'm a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, there's always a compromise. So just trying to be balanced. And structure is the most important thing, and keeping that you have that structure and meeting all your needs. So, you know, going to the exercising and also having downtime. And downtime is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is the thing. This is what no one does now. And this drives me crazy, is respecting your own time.
Right.
Your own time is valuable, and you need to treat that with value. And yeah. So stop... going online, stop, you know, only actually do things that you go and can, and you as an individual, not you as the world, go, yeah, this is good for me.
Right.
You know, like I'd sit and listen to Steve Martin's old comedy tapes 20 times over because I love them.
Yeah.
And they're good for me. I don't ever go on social media, like ever.
Yeah.
Because you just save a lot of time to do things you actually love.
Right.
And when you sorry, go on.
Imagine the memes you're missing out. I mean, they're good right now.
You know what the maddest thing is? If you don't go on social media... And yet still, the best memes you get sent by your mates.
Yeah, and there's not many right now.
And there's not, and it's miserable. Yeah. It's not, and like, and when you actually sit there and say that out loud, I know you said that as a joke, but
no,
like,
it's because that's what you think in
your brain.
It's
you're
part
like,
of culture.
It, yeah, you're like, mate, am I really going to fill my brain with miserable shit I didn't want to know about,
mm-hmm.
other people's lives that I'm going to compare to, all of this, so I can see a fucking average meme that's nowhere near as funny as my mate's going to make me laugh when I'm in a Discord call with him.
Right, right. And also, like, memes are being reposted by brands now anyway, so you'll see it in an advertisement if you don't see it there.
But, like, you know, I just think you got to really value your own time. But and it's keeping, strangely enough, focusing on the big questions of, like, how do I fucking handle getting, at least for me, and I've came back to this after years of, you know, how do I handle getting 10 million views? How do I handle having hundreds of people come back on the streets? The answers are the simplest things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, well, you need to create this. It's like, no, mate, fucking go on a walk with your mum.
Yeah.
Fucking go on a date with your girlfriend. Like, sit and watch some TV. Like, those are the things that are so much more important, and that's how you actually get
it. Yeah,
you know,
wow, that's good.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, well, I think that's pretty much all I'm gonna end
I
it on that.
I know,
note.
I got well intense.
No, I think that
was like five answers to your question. I was like,
no, I think that's a great way to end. This is a good conversation. Thank you
thanks,
for
that was
coming
really
on,
good, mate.
I hope you enjoyed it. Anything you want to plug,
mate? Go to my tour, you dickheads. It will be well funny. If you like, any, like, don't be a knobhead, just come.
Yeah. Awesome.
In Australia or England or America. Also, by the way, guys, I'll be doing a collab show with Matthew Reif.
Yes.
We will be rating your appearances.
Okay, so I got so caught up in the conversation that I totally forgot about a really important segment of this podcast, which is where I ask the guest for a song recommendation, and then I give one on my own, and then they get added to a long-running playlist that you can find in the description or whatever. Tommy let me know after the episode that the song that he wants to add to the playlist is Growing Up by Bruce Springsteen, and the song that I'm going to add is a British one, because... and it's called Your Mum by Wet Leg. You can find the playlist linked in the description. Anyway, I'm having so much fun with this podcast. I hope you guys are enjoying it too. And if you are, maybe leave a little review or a comment or something. I don't know how all of this works really yet, but just give me some sort of validation. I'd love it. I love your attention so much. It keeps me going. I love it. I'm addicted to it. I'm never gonna get enough of it. See you next week on A Different Couch.